They can be a great people color, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to 2013, and welcome back to issue 45 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that resolved to read more comics this year. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVane. I don't know if I could read any more comics.
But we're going to, David.
All right, damn it.
That's the resolution. But in this issue, this very first issue back for the new year, we're pretty much doing what we did last year. Which means that we're looking at Marvel's Cosmic 2013, helping Peter David recover, and a geeky proposal. Then we look at all the Guardians of the Galaxy casting rumors. Apparently we're in the movie now, David.
I heard that. Yeah. My agent called me.
I'm waiting for a callback. Plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Ant-Man Season 1. Now, this is the part where we exchange pleasantries.
Cool. Did you have a new year?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. You were here on New Year.
I was here on New Year's Day. We recorded film, actually, Hobbit Special. See that episode?
Yeah, it's up. It's up.
Issue 100.
100.
And the final film, actually.
We came and we went in one go. So, Richard, how's your time been since our last recording of this wonderful show?
Eventful.
Eventful.
Yes.
Yes. What have you been reading?
What have I been reading? What,
anything in particular that stood out at you over the last few weeks?
We've skipped over a very important
section. Well, no. We're coming back to the
book. We're coming back to what we've been reading.
Well, actually, has anything grabbed you?
This week, a couple of new series started, and I'll talk about them more in a minute, but Morbius the Last Vampire.
Yes. I want to talk about what we've been reading.
Which we'll talk about that, and also the new Avengers.
Which I haven't looked at yet.
But that they've been standing out for me. I've been going back and catching up on this. I've been reading a lot of ephemera. I've actually been going back and reading a lot of the Death in the Family stuff.
Okay, we'll talk about that and what we've read, because I actually think I'm up to date on that.
Because what I did after our last episode, which is still available on iTunes and on the website, I went and listened to...
Really? I thought it was gone.
Someone took it off. we burn every episode after we've...
It's a little bit like the BBC used to do with their old television shows.
Doctor Who episodes, yeah, exactly. One day we will end up in a landfill under the M4 or something. I went back and listened to that Scott Snyder interview with Kevin Smith on Fat Man on Batman, and that actually prompted me to go back and read all the Death in the Family stuff, which I'd been sort of fallen out of.
What struck me about that interview, though? He's so young.
He is young.
I mean, he maybe not young. Like, I think he's in his 30s, but
he's not like 13 or anything.
So young.
He sounds young. He is actually quite young. He just seems to be only in his 20s or so. Mm. And the fact that he is probably now considered one of the major Batman writers.
Mind.
Yeah, amazing. Mm. And he's not just doing that. He's been doing American Vampire. He wrote a novel. He's been doing, I think he's been doing some plays, I think, as well. And he's been doing...
I see another Bendis in the making.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And he's got the new Superman book coming out this year as well. I think he is going to be the Alan Moore of our time.
I was just thinking he's kind of maybe supplanting Geoff Johns, perhaps.
For DC, he's the go-to guy, I think he'll be at the moment. But is there anything that's caught your fancy early this year?
I want to talk about, we're actually going to do it as our book next week, but I finally finished off Punk Rock Jesus, and it left an impact. So I think that's the moment, and I want to talk about a little bit in what we've been reading, because I think that's... I also want to talk about Alan Moore's latest work, which is confusing me.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that in an upcoming show. But yeah. I think...
Let's move on, though, because I want to go into detail on some of this stuff, and I believe you have something.
Well, before we go on, as always, it's time for our Vintage Clip of the Week.
Yay!
And this one was hard to find, so let me...
Calling Giant Man. Do you read me, Giant Man? An alien called the Space Phantom is impersonating the Hulk. Needs your help badly. Over to you.
Sounds serious, Wasp. Let's go. He called Giant Man rather than Ant-Man, so it must be a top priority emergency.
While you double your size, I'll become Wasp size. Here goes nothing. Henry Pym, did anyone ever tell you that you have the most deliciously blue eyes?
Be serious, little one. I've a feeling we have a strange and difficult task ahead of us.
Backing out of the way won't help you. Wait till my next swing.
The Hulk waits for nothing. I'll crush you like a flea.
Hold it, hold it. Take it easy, little fella.
Giant man, let go, you oversized clown.
Stay out of this, you hear? Big as you are, I can smell it.
Listen to me, both of you. This is insane. We're supposed to be allies. What's happening to us?
You're right. We're making fools of ourselves.
Giant man, be careful. I sense an evil presence here.
You got off lucky that time, mister. But if you ever cross me again...
Oh, quiet, you muscle-bound fool. Didn't you hear the wasp? She senses trouble.
Giant man's pun. What a stroke of luck for me.
A wasp! Oh, attacking me! Impossible!
Is the tiny wasp to be the next victim of the sinister space phantom?
Quiet, little one.
A wasp attacking me. That's impossible.
I thought she was going to say something entirely different when she went, oh, giant man.
Oh, look, that was really hard to come by because there wasn't a lot of Ant-Man or giant man stuff prior to... The 90s and more recent comics. I think in the current Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, I think Giant Man and Ant-Man, regular character. The Wasp was a regular character
in that.
But this was actually from, of course, the Marvel Superheroes Hour that used to be on in the 1966, that amazing gold line of stuff.
It's amazing.
That was from there was a couple of really drunk and angry sounding voices, and I think that was meant to be the Hulk.
There was something about
that was from the Incredible Hulk segment. It was an episode called Sting of the Wasp.
There was something about the voice acting in those Marvels.
It's almost as if they did the whole series without having any reference to the character they were playing whatsoever. Well, Giant Man sounds big.
Well, they're called for Giant Man, so therefore must be really important.
They've called for overcompensating,
man. You can just imagine all these bottles of whiskey in the studio. All these guys okay, all right.
So, David, let's get back to what we have been reading in more detail.
Can we talk a little bit? I know you haven't read much of it yet, but I just want to bring up Alan Moore's latest work for a second.
I've not
because
read
we're
any
up
of
to
it.
Issue 4, maybe 5 now. I can't remember. And they don't ever on the comic itself tell you how many issues it's going to be. But Alan Moore only writes limited series now. He doesn't write anything. It goes on forever. So I'm assuming that it's going to, you know, finish at 6 or something like that. And you tell me this morning that it's 10. I don't know how they're going to quite milk it for 10. But this is the strangest comic book I think I've read in quite some time because I actually have no idea what it's about.
Hmm.
It's some sort of dystopian future, it feels like.
What's it called again, sir?
Fashion Beast.
Fashion Beast.
And it's basically some sort of strange dystopian future where the fashion moguls basically kind of rule the world by the looks of it. And this very strangely androgynous character at the beginning who you assume is a guy who dresses like Marilyn Monroe, who works as a hat check girl but gets fired because of some vindictive thing that he does, ends up going for an audition, working for... This is happening over the course of 4 issues, mind you. Working for this particular fashion god who is super powerful. And during the fitting, we now find out that the fitter basically sits back going, oh my god, you're actually a girl. So all this time we thought it was a guy in drag. Now it looks like it might actually be... This is the weirdest thing I've ever read.
This is a little bit of background on the book. I've just had a look it up. It's
Please do, because I'm coming to this cold. I was just reading it.
It's a 10-issue limited series, and it's based on a screenplay by Alan Moore, Anthony Johnston, and, would you believe, Malcolm McLaren, the manager of the Sex Pistols. Now, this was, according to the Wikipedia entry, it was originally written by Moore in 85 while he was working on Watchmen.
Right.
So if it's better than his current stuff, then maybe that's the reason it was written during the 80s. With the intention of it becoming a full-length feature film, the screenplay was never filmed and the work was sat unpublished for 30 years until Moore was approached by Avatar Press to collaborate on a graphic novel adaptation of the work of Anthony Johnston and Facundo Piccio. Fashion Beast was announced to have a 10-issue run, with the first issue releasing in September 2012. Apparently, it's an adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, set in the 80s.
Okay, that actually kind of makes sense. We haven't got there yet, but the head fashion guy who runs the big fashion group is never seen. He's just behind glass all the time, so obviously he's the Beast at this point. Okay, knowing that, that might make it make a little bit more sense. I need you to read this, though.
Oh, no, I definitely want to read this now.
This is a really, really bizarre book.
Now that I know it's actually 1980s Alan Moore and not his
And it feels
work,
that way.
Yeah.
But it's bizarre, and it's taking its time getting anywhere. So well worth having a look at, just because the artwork is really interesting. And it is one of those books where I actually have no idea what's coming next. And because I have no idea what's coming next, it makes it very interesting. You know, when you read a lot of stuff nowadays, you kind of go, oh, I know where this is in. I know where this is leading. A little bit like the book we're doing this week. You kind of know where it's leading.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's kind of interesting and refreshing, a little bit like Saga, in the sense of reading something you just don't know what's going to happen
next. I love a book that keeps you on your toes, because I think the problem with most mainstream comics, which, to be fair, it's still the majority of what we read, is mainstream comics.
Yeah, of course.
Is that there is a certain, as good as the writers are and as good as the creators are, and as much freedom as they have these days, there is a certain expectation that those characters are going to do certain things that are consistent with those characters, because you can't sort of turn around and have, you know, Captain America sodomize a puppy.
I mean, exactly.
It's not going to happen. You're not
this is actually the premise of the new Deadpool series, which is they had to hire him because you couldn't have Captain America decapitating presidents.
Yeah, I'd like to apologize for my mind. That was the first place that I went to, was Captain America sodomizing a puppy. clearly, it would have been a kitten.
And I think we can actually... I think that still qualifies for a clean tag. Anyway,
it qualifies for a clean tag as long as you don't think about it too long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, no, too late.
So this is a very strange book, Fashion Beast. It is probably, I could honestly say, probably next to Punk Rock Jesus, which we'll talk about more next issue, is one of the most unique things I've read in some time.
Okay.
Just because it's so different. And you read it going, what the hell is this all about? Punk Rock Jesus, I felt the same way about.
Well, definitely. And we'll cover Fashion Beast in full when it finishes its run. But I'll start reading it between now and then. So.
Yeah, look, I think you want to read it now, because it's going to take a couple of reads. Because I think there's more depth to it than I'm giving it first credit for. Alan Moore's like that. You'll find things on the second time through you, and I didn't see that the first time, you know? So I may need to go back over it. What have you been reading?
I've been catching up on a few things. I've actually gone back to look at some of the Fantastic Four FF stuff from around the time, spoilers, people, Johnny Storm exited the scene, and the whole sort of run up there, because of all the cosmic connections and stuff. There's a whole lot of...
Correct me if I'm wrong. The FF actually came up because of his disappearance.
Yeah. And there was... I don't know if the series is... Anyway, the Annihilus basically returns in that run.
I thought it was destroyed.
There was, I don't know, there's an Annihilus return, so that's the reason I picked
it up. Let's water down our cosmic saga.
I'm picking up anything with a cosmic label on it, which is going to be very difficult.
That's the entire Marvel Universe
in 2013, which we'll talk about a little bit in the comics news, because it's pretty much their focus for at least the next year, or probably the next year and a half leading up to the Guardians movie, which we'll also be talking about in movie news.
We should get some themes and bumpers ready,
shouldn't we? So I've been reading that stuff. I've been catching up, and I said, in the Death in the Family stuff, because I've actually found it really fascinating. The thing that struck me in the Scott Snyder interview was when he was talking about seeing the Joker as the court jester in classic literature, and him being the kind of guy who comes in and says, look, I actually see things far more clearly than all your friends and advisors. They're making you soft. You know, this little bat family that you've got, they're actually dragging you down from being your rightful role of King of Gotham. Because they're kind of eroding your power and mystique. And it's quite interesting that Joker, who you can never know what his motivations really are, is basically saying, I'm doing this for you, Bats. This is for us. This is for our relationship. And a few people remark throughout it, and maybe not in the main book, but in Batgirl and in a few of the other offshoots, maybe it was even in Catwoman, she actually says to him, you're in love with him, aren't you? I mean, that's what this is really all about. And it's such an interesting take on it. And you don't necessarily mean sexual love or romantic love, but there is definitely...
Man love
there happening. It's a real bromance that's happening between...
Well, it's that he is the yin to the yang. I mean, that's the thing. He is the polar opposite of Batman.
He is.
You know, and so there is always going to be that connection.
Mm.
More so than any other supervillain that Batman fights. This is his...
Yeah, would Batman be happy beating up street toughs if you know, for the rest of his life, if that was the case? So, look, it's a magnificent story, all the more impressive coming off the back of Court of Owls, Night of Owls stuff. which is so I think Scott Snyder, as we've said, has become one of the greatest writers of modern DC.
And I have to say, I finally caught up with Talon.
And
which
Talon
I had avoided
well.
Talon, and yeah. I actually really liked
no,
Talon.
It's a good book because it's a flawed character. It's an anti-hero character, but it's a character who's trying to get on the right path, and that's what I find fascinating about that book as well. I've caught up, I caught up with a few DC titles because I've been neglecting poor old DC, everything. As much as I hate to say it, and I've said this repeated times, I will be so happy when Jeff Lemire takes over Green Arrow. We've only got one more issue with Anne freaking Nacenti. I almost eroded our clean tag in one fell swoop there. But her writing on that title, at least, is like the Silver Age books, maybe even Golden Age books, because there's all that constant narration. There's that kind of describing what's happening on panel. There's characters thinking about what we can already see on panel. Oh my God, he's coming up behind me. Yeah, we can see that. You know, it's like we know we don't need that sort of narration. All the use of the trick arrows as well. Like Mike Grell got rid of those in the 80s, and they haven't really brought them back in a big way. Because I think there was a recognition that the character was much better when pared down.
And the trick arrows are kind of stupid.
Here it's like he's pulling it. They tried to make it a bit more tech based. It's kind of like, oh, it's my mesh metal arrow or something.
So we're not talking about boxing gloves. But.
No, but it's treading a very dangerous line. And someone writing Green Arrow with no knowledge of Arrow beyond what they'd read. And she's been very open about the fact that she's not read any previous Arrow, she wanted to come to it with a clean slate.
But see, that's a mistake with an old character because you've got to have a history.
But the thing is, the philosophy of New 52 is we start new, but completely. Unfortunately, as we've said many, many times, Marvel now has got it right in the sense it's like, these are your classic characters, we haven't changed them, but here's a point for you to jump on. DC's just arbitrarily recreated characters, whereas if you listen to that Scott Snyder interview again, they talk about the philosophy behind Batman saying, yes, it's ostensibly a reboot, but it's kind of all that stuff happened though.
I like the fact that that's what says, makes the unless character. Unless informed otherwise, the history is there.
Is there, and I think that's what they should have done with all the DC characters, unless they really, really, really wanted to kind of completely reboot a character.
But I feel if you're going to completely reboot the universe, they needed to go all the way. They didn't go all the way.
No, because the thing is, characters like the Arrow reboot feels arbitrary. It doesn't feel as though you've gained anything by making him new except making him young and beardless and more easily able to tie in with the TV series. Unfortunately, it's nowhere near as good as the TV series.
No, and do you know what the New 52 has started to feel like? And this is funny because, I mean, and we're not being hypocritical. We actually were big supporters of the New 52 when it did start.
Our first show was on the New 52.
Absolutely, and I think they did some amazing stuff early on. What's happened is we're now, over 12 months later...
We're 15 months in,
we're starting to see the cracks forming in this whole thing because some of it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And a lot of books have fallen by the wayside. Some of it still works. But like we've said before, Justice League, the first arc up until where we get the book written about them, is a masterpiece. But then it falls apart.
If you go back and listen to our early issues, I'm like the biggest DC flag waver in the world and you're Marvel's biggest fan. I think the fact that I am now such a massive Marvel reader, and I'm reading virtually everything Marvel puts out.
When the New 52 came out, I ditched Marvel. I was all in. I was going every DC book, and I was going, this is pretty good.
And maybe I'm a victim of fads. Like, as soon as someone reboots something, I'm all over it.
No, I think you can also identify quality, though. I mean, this Marvel now, which I was a big skeptic of, has worked on the most part. I'm not saying everything is perfect.
Not every title works, but their core titles...
Yeah.
I still call titles for a reason.
I actually really, and this is, I don't know if it's in the news or not, but I mean, the whole thing with the Spider-Man thing that's going on.
I haven't touched it yet, but in brief.
I haven't actually read that issue. I did read Avenging Spider-Man.
It's a big chunky issue, issue 700, but a lot of that's back matter. There's a lot of backup stories and stuff there.
And I read Avenging Spider-Man, the latest Avenging Spider-Man, which is a continuation of it with Doc Ock and everything else. I'm not sure if this works.
This is stunt. Comic book stuff that we haven't seen since the 90s.
Probably since the Clone Saga.
A lot of the stuff that... The problem with Marvel, with the exception of Marvel Now, Marvel haven't done big events as well as DC the last couple of years.
No.
Unfortunately, we can very easily separate them here. DC have been doing magnificent events, but crappy reboots. Marvel have been doing
crappy events,
but a magnificently, almost flawlessly executed reboot.
And as an ongoing, they're more consistent at the moment.
Absolutely. But the thing is, there are events like Avengers versus X-Men and all those sorts
Fear
of things.
Itself,
Fear Itself and all those ones that are coming out. I think they've got more coming up soon.
Their last,
Spider Island, all that sort of stuff.
Their last decent event was Siege.
Yeah.
And we're talking a couple of years ago now.
And so it's been very poor for them to get that kind of... And it feels cheap and it feels like a marketing tool. Whereas when you have stuff over at DC... Night of Owls and Death of the Family, we've mentioned the Green Lantern stuff that's been
Flashpoint.
Happening. Flashpoint itself was a magnificent one.
Yeah.
Flashpoint, not least of which because it was those seven issues and that's all you had to do.
Well, seven issues and the continuing, the satellite books.
You didn't have to read
A, and B, they weren't actually tied into any other comics. They
exactly.
were standalone three-issue miniseries.
Yeah,
so you could actually just read those three-issue
miniseries.
And
there's one-shots. There was
and
like,
one-shots,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, what did those characters
well, the
look
Arrow
like?
Was a one-shot.
Yeah, that was good. And actually, bits of that have informed the new series, but not the good bits. So, look, you know, I think it's just an interesting time to read comics, but really, the point being that my conversion from DC to Marvel, you can trace if you go back and listen to the previous 44 issues of this show, because you can see each week I'm getting a little less.
Your conversion started with the Stealth reboot. Your conversion started with the reboot of Daredevil.
Exactly.
And the reboot of Avenging Spider-Man.
Yes.
And the reboot of Avengers.
Yeah, and I think it was very clever, and they called it a Stealth reboot at the time for very good reason. It was just kind of like, try these out for size, see how you like them. It was kind of like,
here's a whole bunch of number ones.
Yeah,
just try them out.
This is good. I quite like this. And even before Marvel now, I think Hawkeye had been relaunched as well. Like I think that was
Hawkeye was about three or four issues. Yeah.
So that all those sorts of things that were coming out was kind of like, and you know what? It's good books is what actually suckered me in.
Speaking of Hawkeye, by the way, I also read the most recent Hawkeye issue, which is brilliant.
Look, this book just keeps getting better.
And you got to ask yourself, if you looked at it on the surface, you would say the issue is ostensibly about the fact they need a new satellite dish on the apartment building he owns because he put an arrow through it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's what it's about. And yet it is a brilliant Christmas issue.
Wonderful book.
With flashbacks to the gang beating him up and the apartment building having the barbecue on the roof. And, you know, and you sit there going, this is so – and it's all about him possibly skipping town but deciding to stay because of the betterment of his people.
And the beautiful thing about it is if you've been a Hawkeye fan, which I haven't been, but I know enough about the character to know that there's little references to old school comics in there as well. Previous partners, the people who took on the mantle of Hawkeye when he was off doing other things.
Yeah.
You know, all that sort of stuff. It's such a beautifully crafted book that's obviously done with a lot of love for the character.
And it's not in any way, even though it's about Hawkeye, it's not in any way a Capes book.
No.
It's not about... I mean, the other superheroes sometimes make a cameo. Shield's made a cameo here and there.
Yeah.
He does, you know, take his bow and arrow. But a lot of the time, his bow and arrow is literally on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
it's like he's
not in costume.
He's not in costume. This is Hawkeye on his day off.
Well, now that we're talking about Marvel and their plans for next year, I think it's a good time to segue into a bit of this.
What a scoop!
Now, this first story is not really a story so much as an interview that I was reading, and I found it quite interesting. Axel in Charge is an interview that they regularly do with Marvel's editor in chief Axel Alonso on Comic Book Resources or CBR. Great website. Obviously, anybody who's into comics has to go to this website at some stage. And they have a fairly regular interview with him. I think it's every Friday or something. They put one out. So what they ended up doing was they started talking to him about their plans for 2013, and they specifically asked him about, they said, you know, in terms of topping initiatives like AVX and Marvel Now this year and what you're going to do. And he sort of gave a bit of a line about from deep space to the negative zone, the stakes had never been just Earth in 2013. We'll close the gap between Earth and the so-called cosmic universe like never before. Nova and the Guardians of the Galaxy and a few other characters we're yet to reveal will be just as important to the fate of the Marvel universe as the Avengers or the X-Men. And they sort of go on to talk about, and what I really like about this is they're really saying that all of the books It doesn't matter what they're doing. Is they will be tied into this bigger picture that they're looking at. They will be tied into the cosmic. What I really liked is those of us who've read a substantive amount of cosmic books, which pretty much you and I, David, have read pretty much everything from the last 5-6 years anyway.
And a shout out to Josh at my work, who's a massive, and he's the one who actually put me onto it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so he's the one who actually said, have you read their Cosmic Universe? And I went, no, and he said, you've got
to
read this.
Yeah, and it's caused me to go back and get stuff like the Jim Starlin stuff and all this sort of stuff before that. And I've actually gone back to early 2000s, late 90s with some of the stuff I've been picking up, and it's just so deep and rich, you know. But the thing about those books is, and as this interviewer points out, they've often been separate to the rest of the Marvel U, kind of, and certainly that Guardians run that we read, all that was happening while
Current continuity was running.
Yeah, while Civil War was happening on Earth, and they mention it every now and then. It's kind of like, really, that's what it's about? Identities? You serious? We're fighting for the
fighting for the
existence of the universe,
here,
you know. But what they're actually saying is that now the Guardians, when they're in the thick of it, and the link to this interview is in our show notes, when you know, Earth's in trouble, the Guardians will be in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. You know, Nova's going to protect Earth. You know, all these characters will intersect and interact. So if you've just been collecting cosmic stuff, be prepared to spend a bit more money this year.
Yeah. I also like to, can we talk a little bit about the design of the new Guardians?
Yes.
Because we've talked about this briefly on the show once before. We talked about Groot looking like a Christmas tree.
This, by the way, is going to be a very Guardians heavy show.
Yeah, it is. I'm still not sure why Groot looks like a Christmas tree.
Well, everyone seems to have the Tony Stark-esque lights on,
which
them.
Leads us to believe. I mean, apparently in the latest issue of Iron Man, which I haven't read yet, but I have been enjoying the Marvel Now run of Iron Man, apparently this is the introduction of the space armor.
Does this mean that Groot's riddled with arc reactors?
Let's hope it's not flammable. Anyway, yeah. I just wanted to point out that I actually don't mind the look of the whole Stark armor and everything on the Guardians. I quite like this. I quite like the fact that Rocket Raccoon looks pretty badass.
And Drax still hasn't learned how to wear a shirt.
Yeah, I was about to say, I quite like the fact that Drax still isn't wearing a shirt because his tattoos have got to be visible. I have to say, the only one I don't like out of the whole thing is I don't like Gamora.
Yeah, because she's not nearly as naked as she used
to be. No, and the thing about Gamora was she was so badass she didn't need her clothes. Yeah. You know what I mean? She was the most dangerous woman in the galaxy.
There has been a conscious move to clothe the female characters, and I'm not necessarily against this from a feminist point of view, because I read one of the most recent issues of Catwoman, where the plot device, even though it was tied into the Joker making her do something against Batman, the plot involved her undressing 3 times throughout that issue. And now, while as a red-blooded male, I've got no objection to that, if you take a step back, you got to go, sorry, fellas, it's a little bit much.
No, look, I understand that. And I understand that we want, I mean, I think the new costume on Captain Marvel, for instance, I think is really good. I still have a real soft spot for the Ms. Marvel costume just because it was so, let's face it was so.
Oh, you know? Yeah, it was basically a swimming costume.
Yeah, it was so, with the little sash and the whole bit. It was very 70s in some ways. But I quite like the new Marvel.
The Captain Marvel costume is a strong costume.
It's a strong costume.
It's a strong retro costume,
character.
And it's amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Amazing book as well, by the way.
Yeah, great book. And they've just finished one arc. They're about to go into a new arc now, so it's a good time to jump on. So,
cool.
But with Guardians of the Galaxy, when we're getting into the cosmic world and so forth, I can understand dressing up. But there are certain characters that part of their defining character is their costume. Wonder Woman's defining thing on Wonder Woman is that costume. And whether it's practical or not is not the issue, but for 70, 80 years, whatever it is that she's been being written, that's the image of Wonder Woman, you know? It's like Power Girl. The new Power Girl costume doesn't work for me because for the last 20, 30 years, whatever it is, Power Girl has looked a certain way. And when you completely reinvent a character like that, you kind of go, that's not my character anymore, you know? And for the past however many issues it is that we've been living with the cosmic universe, you know, Gamora had a look.
Yes.
And even if you wanted to add more to her and add armor to her, parts of her defining character are her cape and her hood and her thigh boots and her sword. And, you know, it's like there are certain things that are just Gamora. And in this cover art, as much as I like Bendis and as much as I think this is going to be a very exciting book, I look at that and I go, that's not Gamora. That actually looks, they've toned her down so much that she actually looks like Mantis.
And she looks like Mantis or She-Hulk.
Or She-Hulk, exactly. Yeah. And it's not Gamora anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And that's... And yes, I understand from the feminist point of view, you want to, you know, try and clothe our women and blah. Absolutely. I have no problem with that. But there are certain things we don't want to lose.
Lose the character in that. The character absolutely. In that no, change, I agree with you on you know? That.
So looking at this cover art for Guardians 1, which is coming, I just look at it and go, on the most part, I'm excited.
Yeah. No, look... Everything about this new series, I've pre-ordered everything to do with the new Guardians and Nova series. I'm so down, and I've got you to thank for getting me hooked on that as well. So,
sorry, I'm ranting. We're dragging the show down. Let's.
No,
keep
we're already about halfway through the show, but I'll quickly run through a couple of these next stories. Peter David, over the Christmas New Year period, probably best known for his historic 12-year run on things like The Incredible Hulk.
Oh yes,
had a stroke, which he's recovering from. But a lot of people have been asking how they can help out. And Comics Alliance posted something from him that's on his website, Peter's own website, and Kathleen, his partner, her personal blog, basically saying, look, you know, we've got enough health insurance to pay for things, but if you want to help out, there's some of those extra bills and things that, you know, the insurance doesn't cover, you know. Best, easiest way to help us out is buy our stuff. And they're just saying, buy his books from Crazy 8 Press or from Amazon or Barnes & Noble websites. We're not product endorsing, but I just wanted to mention that just as a way of someone who is a major figure in comics history and still remains so. And people have been on various sites because, you know, it's one of these things, great public outpouring things. There's something else I'm going to mention briefly of this is not comics related, but it is geek film related. J.J. Abrams recently screened...
Oh, was this not the most heartwarming story
best
you've
story
ever heard?
So there's a huge Star Trek fan, and I can relate to this as a having been a Star Trek fan for as long as I can remember, at least 20 years,
yeah, yeah.
You know. At least since Next Generation, but probably before that as well. You know, fan who was dying really wanted to see the film.
He wanted to see the 9 minutes.
He wanted to see the 9 minutes, which wasn't, unfortunately, the screening that he went to didn't play or whatever happened. So he put this appeal out on a message
board.
Actually,
he didn't. His family did.
That's right.
His family put out an appeal saying, "Is there any way we can get the 9 minute screen?"
And this made it to J.J. Abrams, who decided not to show him the 9 minutes. He showed him a rough cut of the film and apologized profusely in advance, saying, "Look, it's not ready. We know we've still got work to do." They've pretty much responded saying, look, this is the greatest thing anyone could ever do.
Yeah.
Look, we've both met J.J. Abrams. He was one of the greatest people we've ever met as a geek.
He's such a nice guy.
And to hear a story like this, it's wonderful. So
J.J., hats off to you.
And look, while we're on heartwarming stories, I love this story. I always like to throw in a nice little fun story when I can. Link is in the show notes. It's basically on edsjunk.net. This guy proposed to his girlfriend. He previously built his girlfriend a working arc reactor. Well, maybe not a working arc reactor, but a working model of an arc reactor from the Iron Man films and presumably the comic books. Because his girlfriend is a bit of a geek. His girlfriend, now fiance, was proposed to with a modified version of the arc reactor.
If you look
at the video on it, there's not much audio worth listening to on the video.
Obviously, it's not. Completely movie.
Zarek Industries.
he's just really on the video. He just describes what he's doing.
Right.
This is a special one.
But really, if you have to look at the video to see this, out of the center of the arc reactor pops up at one point the ring.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And he modified it so that raised up in the middle. I love this story because it's just a nice romantic.
It's so geeky.
Yeah.
I love it.
So geeky, so
now,
lovely.
When, just an early plug because why not, we're there. Coming up in our Buried the Lead show will be lots of stories
like this. The other sorts of things we'll be looking for. So if you find them.
Send them to us.
Send them to us through the usual channels, but we'll have new ones.
Anybody who's ever listened to the old Geek Action Show, you know the sort of stuff we used to talk about.
Yeah.
Anything odd and weird in the world of geeks, send it in.
And if you've got anything you want to ask us. On this show or any of our other shows.
And we already have the email address for that. It's feedback@buriedthelead.com.
Excellent.
There you go. All right, so that's enough of that plugging.
So let's just move on to the next section, David.
The next section would be this.
Now, we told you this was going to be Guardians heavy, and there's been a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy news coming out this week. Well, not so much news as rumours.
It's all rumour at this point, let's face it.
Look, as we know, James Gunn is directing the Guardians of the Galaxy film, which is due out in late 2014. I think it's about August 2014. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's actually earlier. I think it's May 2014
it's,
now.
It's the first release of the year, so it'll be May.
Okay, May. Oh, no, I think Captain America's out first.
Oh, no, you're right. No, it's late. It's August or something like that. August,
something
September,
like that.
Something like that.
They might have bumped it up in... Anyway, it's out in 2014, but basically everybody this week has been cast at some stage in the Guardians.
And can
of
I
the
point
Galaxy
out
film.
That in the movie version, Gamora looks more like Gamora, but she still has more clothes.
That's
on.
The concept art. Yeah. That's always subject. Actually, and Drax is wearing a shirt. So there you go.
There you go.
The people that they've mentioned in relation to Peter Quill, which is the Star-Lord character this week, there's a lot of... I mean, it's Zachary Levi and Jim Sturgis got mentioned originally.
I do like the idea of Zachary Levi.
I think he'd be good. Then Joseph Gordon-Levitt got mentioned because a third person, a third mystery person tested for it. I don't dislike that casting, and
that kind of works for me.
If because he has got the comedy chops for it, because let's forget that's where he started.
That doesn't work for me is Michael Rosenbaum, who tweeted out saying that he'd had his audition.
Yeah, so that's actually confirmation from the horse's mouth. This is the only person we know who actually tested.
Yeah,
everybody else is speculation.
Michael Rosenbaum, for those who have forgotten because it's been a while, was Lex on Smallville.
He's got hair now, and
now here's a funny thing: I had heard that he had given up acting. He actually was going off to be a writer. He was going to write books and apparently did not want to come back for the season finale of Smallville.
All he tweeted was, "Read from my pal James Gunn, Guardians of the Galaxy for Peter Quill. What a treat. Thanks, Jimmy." And so that's all he knows. That's all we know. So whether he's going to be Star-Lord or not, or whether he was just there to...
He might have been reading opposite other people.
Exactly. That's the thing. So all those sorts of things have come up. And then most recently...
Now, if anybody out there has an idea of who they think should be Peter Quill, I'd love to hear your suggestions.
Well, the most recent one was John Krasinski. At this point, I think, because of all the speculation, all these so-called experts, be it Variety, Deadline, doesn't matter who it is, Hollywood Reporter, they've all weighed in on it. And Variety, who's normally pretty reliable with stuff, they don't have a clue.
No, nobody does.
I think all they know is who's taking meetings, and that doesn't mean anything. Some of the other sort of casting that they've mentioned is around Drax. According to bleedingcool.com, three candidates named Isaiah Mustafa, who we know better as the Old Spice Guy.
I'm on a horse.
I'm on a horse.
I'm on a horse.
I'm killing Thanos.
Hello, ladies. I used to have all these clips. We used to play on Geek Action all the time.
I'm the Death Destroyer your guy wants to be.
Hello, ladies. How are you?
Also, Brian Patrick Wade, who I don't know.
Brian Patrick Wade.
So we'll look up while I'm also reading at the sometime WWE performer Dave Bautista, who I don't know as well, but he's a WWE Brian guy. And Patrick. You need someone with a bit of a build.
I still think The Rock or Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel would be put with my cast.
Because you're putting them under a lot of makeup, remember? So, what was his name again? Brian
Patrick Wade is an American actor notable for his roles as Captain Craig in Sino Man Shvetchi in the miniseries Generation Kill and Kurt in The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, Kurt! I know him!
Yeah. So, he's been mentioned.
He's a big boy.
So they've mentioned him in relation for Drax. Yeah.
If you want to see what he looks like, go back and watch the very first episode of The Big Bang Theory, way back season one. He's the Penny's ex-boyfriend who pants them.
There you go.
Yeah. So I remember, I just saw that episode the other day. It was on TV.
Well, the WWE guy that they've mentioned for Drax kind of looks a little bit like The Rock, just in terms of physique and stuff like that. So I think they, depending on how much acting they're going to ask the person who plays The Rock to do.
Drax doesn't say much.
Yeah, who plays The Rock, who plays Drax to do. they just need someone who looks cool on the part. I don't know, but we don't know what direction they're taking with this movie. No. Anyways, moving swiftly.
But you along, also had a personal preference for the voice of Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, I thought it would have been someone like...
Ray Winston.
Ray Winston, thank you. His name slipped my mind. Because he did a similar voice in one of the Narnia films.
Yeah.
He made it was that kind of really sort of rough sort of cockney accent.
He was a squirrel or something.
Yeah, he was a squirrel in that, and I like to hear Rocket. Because all the times they've done Rocket Raccoon, be it in the animated series or in video game recently, he's always been, this is the Star-Lord, you'll respect him.
He's very cockney.
And apparently that's how he's meant to be. And I never read him that way. I always read him as Max from Sam and Max. It's like, gee, Sam, this is unfeasibly large rocket launcher that you've got.
I think they should go that direction.
But so I always read him as that, but I'd like to hear him as a little Cockney ragamuffin as well. So
yeah, that'd be cool.
That's great. That's pretty much all I got for movie news, because that's kind of dominated the comic book stuff.
It has. I mean, the news over the Guardians of the Galaxy, for a film that everybody, when they first heard about it, went, huh? To now being the hottest property in town,
yeah,
is a really interesting transition. So it's been going for a while. But I think we need to move
on. We've got 21 minutes to talk Ant-Man. So, David, start the music.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It's not exactly music.
Well, start the little clip thing that has me talking in it.
Ready, please, Mr. Music? This week we are reading Ant-Man Season 1 by Tom DeFalco and I believe it's Horatio Dominguez. Horatio. I always like that name. Now, we actually did a Season 1 many months ago. We did Fantastic Four Season Correct. 1, which I was underwhelmed by. We thought it was cute, but it was underwhelming. It was kind of lightweight. So I was a bit hesitant to return to the Season 1 collection. Now, I got to say, initial response to this is after reading Ant-Man Season 1, I actually wouldn't mind going back and reading a couple others.
Yeah, look, way back in issue 17, we did Fantastic Four Season 17? 1. Wow. Yeah, it was quite a while ago, so we're talking almost 30 issues ago. and the photo we've got on, as I think it was like a Susan come in, I was just thinking about you with Reed Richards' head inflated. Right. It was a poor book because it fundamentally forgot what the characters were about. Now, I read Season 1 Ant-Man because Ant-Man was a character I've never really followed a lot. As you know, I wasn't a Marvel guy growing up. But if I had to sum up this book in a word, it'd be fun.
I agree. It's still lightweight. Don't get me wrong.
Mm. Which is the aim of these books?
I think the aim of Season 1 is to basically say, if you're not a comic book reader, here's a way of having some fun.
Yeah.
You don't need any background. You can just kind of jump in. And that's fine. It's hard for somebody who's read, let's face it, in this last year alone, I have read several years worth of comic books.
Mm.
And so, you know, you become a little bit jaded after a while. And if things don't jump out at you immediately, you kind of move past them. And I think the Season 1s were a little bit like that. But I got to say that after reading this, there have been a couple of other Season 1s that I'm now interested in, thinking if they can keep this kind of tone. In particular, I'm thinking of Doctor Strange or even Daredevil Season 1s that I wouldn't mind going back and catching up with. So basically, in a nutshell, Ant-Man Season 1 kind of picks up on the premise that Pym has been developing this particular molecular formula, mm-hmm. which was later deemed the Pym particle by, I think it's his father who calls it.
Yeah,
that.
Marketing reasons.
He's recently lost his wife. He's psychologically damaged, and he's in a mental institution.
Yes.
His father gets him out. His father is a completely unloving, emotionless man who basically says, you shouldn't be here, you should get back to work, and that's all that's important. And he goes back to work for Egghead Studios, is it?
It's Egghead Industries, I think.
Which the head of Egghead Industries happens to have a head shaped like an egg, which is very odd. Basically to work on his Pym particles, which can reduce the size of stuff. From there, the story basically goes into the fact that he develops the formula and it's working, and it looks like Mr. Egghead, whatever his name was, I forget what his actual name is, may not be the nice guy that his father thinks he is. So, Richard, tell me about it. What did you think?
Look, as I said, I found this fun, and what I really like about this book is that it is that the whole philosophy behind the Season 1 is basically origin stories set in a modern setting.
Exactly.
So they've taken the familiar, well, not that familiar for me, Ant-Man origin story, but I think if we've seen any...
I think it's also been retrofitted a little bit.
It's been retrofitted a little bit, but any of those books where it's kind of like... you've seen, or any movie where you've seen a scientist experimenting with something that makes him small or large or invisible or attractive to women suddenly, you know, and you know, any nutty professor type sort of thing. It sort of takes that sort of flavor and sort of
nutty
goes off.
Nutty professor's a great way of putting it. Yeah, this has a very nutty professor
and
feel.
Sort of takes it off on a wacky romp of an adventure. And what I love about this and the way they've done this, it sounds like the sort of test footage that was screened at the Comic-Con, where it's like him shrinking and then getting big and then getting bigger and then, you know, and using his height as kind of a tool of navigating through the the panels, in this case, but through his world, and making him a little bit more of an interesting character.
I'm actually wondering if this is the Ant-Man that the film is going to be based on. Because
I suspect something like this will be.
It has an Edgar Wright kind of feel to it too. It's got kind of this odd sense of humor throughout it.
Because this is a 120 page book, say, which is about roughly the length of a movie.
Yeah.
And at exactly 36 pages in or thereabouts, he gets the helmet, he gets the costume. So that's kind of your standard pacing for. And here we are. I'll just hold it up to Dave. The hero shot of him in his costume, and his little tidy black underpants.
And they actually have some sort of mumbo jumbo explanation as to why he wears the costume,
but, yeah,
because it's
expandable,
expands and shrinks,
things
with
like
him
that. It's kind of like Reed Richards' Unstable Molecules,
yeah,
really.
Which is also a wonderful MacGuffin as well.
Yeah, and why he needs to wear the helmet, because it helps him communicate with
which was his wife's research.
Yes,
which is what egghead,
which he beat out of her. No, sorry.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not in this book, he doesn't.
No, I actually like the fact that we do mention Janet Pym. It's not Pym, though. We do mention Janet Van Dyne.
Yes.
At one point, as somebody that they're trying to set him up with.
Yep.
I think is an interesting little nod to.
I like his control over the ants in this world as well. That he uses ants as a weapon. Like, there's a scene I'm looking at now where he's got the security guards. He makes thousands of ants run up their legs instead of taking them down.
I also like the fact that he makes that connection with that one ant, and at one point he doesn't even have his helmet on, but that ant still responds to him.
Yes.
Because he's already made communication with it,
yep,
and it's become almost like his pet.
You know? Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, and it's like his vehicle. And I thought that was an interesting turn of events. I do like the fact that we get the birth of Giant Man in this, because he basically in the garage, when the wasps come in, he goes, well, we've got to try this the other way. And he turns himself into huge. But I love the fact that he can't maintain that.
Yeah.
He basically passes out because the size is too big for him.
It's, you know? And as we played in the vintage clip at the start of the show, and he actually ends up doing that because he gets attacked by giant insects as well.
Yeah, led by the egghead guy. What's his name? I keep calling him Egghead. His name is actually not Egghead.
I've forgotten.
He just has a head the shape of an egg, and his company is called Egghead, which all thought was a little bit convenient.
Well, but I think that was kind of the tip of the hat to the old school in there.
Yes,
when he and as we played in the vintage clip at the start, Giant Man's called upon when the problem's really big.
Yeah.
Hank Pym wasn't just Ant Man; he was always Giant Man as well. And we were talking about this in the car on the way over here, David, about how. This is something that has to be touched on, because I put this up on our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/behindthepanels. Mm-hmm. And I put up a question. I'll just let people know that we're doing this book. And I'm bringing it up now because one of our readers actually mentioned the fact that Hank Pym is a wife beater.
Yes.
And the actual conversation went as follows. One of our regular readers, Justin Pearson Smith, said... swear, Justin, by the way. We can't read out that on air because we do carry a clean tag.
We should clarify. We don't actually carry a clean tag, but we don't carry
an explicit tag.
So we can get away with some things, like we can probably get away with saying shit. That's fine.
Yeah,
but
all my references to Captain America and small
creatures. Yeah, exactly. But we don't carry an explicit tag, so you're not going to hear us do the sort of language that you would hear and say Bury the Lead or Film Actually or Movie.
Exactly. Movie Club. Listen to those shows if you're a swear bear like us. He just saw this on sale and didn't buy it. Just on that point, I think it probably is worth a purchase because it's.
I think so.
If you've not read the character like me, it was a good fun way of getting into.
Look,
it
restored my faith in the season once.
Yeah, and there's a few more. I'll talk about it in a minute. There's a few more of those coming out this year.
Oh, good. Okay.
In April this year, there's about three more of them coming out, I think. And then Tristan Maiolo, another one of our long-time
Tristan, how are you?
Readers on here says, does he still beat his wife? And I responded with saying, like, you know, for some reason the guy, like, you know, labeled Ultimate Ant-Man is the one that does that with Gusto. And Jason Maiolo, who I'm guessing they're related, responded with, apparently was never supposed to come across that way. And he linked me to two articles. One of them's from... a website called Hadron Kaleidoscope, great name.
Yeah, it's a great name.
For a website, and that's just hadronkaleidoscope.com, which is basically saying Hank Pym was a wife beater. It links, it's basically responding to Jim Shooter's article saying Hank Pym was not a wife beater, who was responding, I think, very much to the image that people had of Hank Pym, certainly after the Ultimates, Mark Miller's Ultimates, that Hank Pym was this horrible wife-beating person. And he was saying, no, it wasn't always that way, whereas the Hadron Kaleidoscope article, and I'm sorry, I don't know who wrote this because it just says posted by admin in blog, it goes through with a lot of clear examples of when, Pym's act of simple clumsiness became... him saying things like, yeah. "Shut up! I got to do this. I've got to save the right before their eyes. I got to save the day right before their eyes." And repeated instances of him whacking Janet throughout the course of.
Look, I used to read Avengers a lot in the 80s, and he was actually ejected from the Avengers on a couple of occasions, and he's been through many different identities: Yellow Jacket, Ant Man, Giant Man, so forth. He was actually Wasp for a while because of guilt over the way that Janet was treated, and it was like his homage. He is a damaged piece of work. Pym is actually, if you think about it in some ways, Hank Pym is actually is a very compelling character in the Marvel Universe because it actually brings a sense of reality into it.
And I just want to read the end. This is from the Hadron Kaleidoscope article, and I really like the way he or she ended this article. It says, "Personally, I don't see why writers want to make Hank seem heroic again. He's a fictional character, and we don't owe it to him to look out for his best interest. He may have gotten away from you somewhere along the line, Marvel, but this is how it goes with real people. Not every villain is a melodramatic mustache twirler who wants to see the world end. In the real world, the villains most of us encounter don't plan anything. They're usually the kind of guys who act impulsively on normal human drives, like rage. That's what make Hank Pym seem real to us, and that's why we'll always define him. You may feel sorry for him because he seems pathetic, but perhaps that's another reason why he doesn't belong on any team with the tagline, 'World's Mightiest Heroes.'"
Agreed. And this is why if you read the more recent Avengers stuff, they've kind of got Hank Pym in the basement.
Which brings us back to this season one book, because this is an attempt to restore Hank Pym to being a heroic character, because this is a completely Janet-free book. This is him. This is a light-hearted book where he's depicted as just a guy, guy, wrong place, wrong time kind of thing. He's just sort of thrown in, and he just wants to be a scientist, and he ends up...
And he doesn't actually set out to be Ant-Man.
No.
That is a side effect. Mm. He's just trying to... verify his beliefs of what's been going on in this company.
And in fact, the current Ant-Man that they're using in FF is not Hank Pym.
It's the other guy.
Scott Lang.
He's the one that stole the Ant-Man suit originally.
He stole the Ant-Man suit. He is a thief, but
he's
atoning for the death of his daughter, not by his hands. Maybe Hank Pym did that too. Hank, you've got a lot to answer for. And this is what season one really is. It's trying to bring back the fun to a character that's gotten pretty dark over the years. And I kind of have to agree with this Hadron Kaleidoscope article in a way. It's like attempts to do that kind of take away the progress that was made by sidelining him in the first place.
True. And we also have to remember that what Marvel has always done, and this is something that they do better than DC, and they've always done better than DC, which is attach real world to these characters. And in the real world, we do have people who have inferiority complexes, who basically lash out at their women. And we have women like Janet Pym who keep going back. Because I've heard this argument too. It's like, why does she put up with
it? And it's not a judgment thing. This is just a reflection of reality.
It's a reflection of reality. Yeah. And the thing is, Janet Pym had a codependent relationship with him for a long time where she kept going back to him. She kept forgiving him.
And look, you know, if he wasn't... I mean, the thing is, our favorite heroes...
And we're not saying that that's the right thing to do. We're not trying to make light of this. We're just trying to say it's a reflection.
Our favorite heroes are flawed characters. Peter Parker, who unfortunately...
rest in peace.
Amazing Spider-Man 700, spoiler alert.
It can't be a spoiler. It's in every form of media there is.
Yeah, look, you know, this is well publicized. And I, for one, welcome our new Dr. Octopus Master. the thing about Peter Parker that made him such a compelling character for 699 issues of Amazing Spider-Man and every other spin-off
was his flaws.
He was a high school kid, which is why the books that got him back to high school. And certainly Amazing Spider-Man, the new movie, for all of its flaws, what it did was restore that kind of angst of him being a high school kid who is trying to make good while being having these great powers thrust
upon
him.
You could almost equate superpowers with puberty.
Yeah. And that's exactly what the same way that they did with the younger mutants in the X-Men. What this does is this is a throwback to the 1950s, 1960s kind of books where it was all about science creating heroes. And that's exactly where the Hulk came from. That's exactly where all those...
What was it? Ralph Garman on the most recent Hollywood Babylon, which is another great show you can listen to, but Ralph Garman actually said, wasn't it cute and quaint how in the 50s we thought radiation would turn us into Hulks and give us superpowers, when in fact it will just kill you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
but I think they've tried to retcon a lot of that by saying we don't know what factor it was that Bruce Banner
had.
Well,
they've turned them into genetics now.
Yeah.
Adding the genetically modified... tag to it now.
Yeah, so, and probably in 50 years' time we'll say, these people messing around with genetics, that would have killed them in a heartbeat. all those sorts of things. But I think this book is a great place to jump on. I think that it does what a season one book should do.
Yes.
And there's been different attempts to do that over the years with when they did things like Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue and Hulk Grey. They were all kind of year one kind of books, but they were done in a much more serious way. They were set in different time periods and had a very nostalgic feel to them.
Yes.
These are very much about refreshing and renewing, kind of like the Ultimate line, but in their own little... continuity.
Yeah, well, because they fit a little bit better into the original universe.
Even though they're
kind of standalone, they're kind of, you don't feel like they're just completely taken out of that universe, which the Ultimate line does. And the Ultimates, as we reviewed on this show, was fantastic.
Mm.
And they took that whole wife beating and everything else that Hank Pym did to the next level.
Yeah.
And
Mark Miller was unapologetic about what he, I mean, he made him the villain.
He took it to the nth degree, and it was a compelling read. Mm. I mean, it was vicious.
That was Mark Miller at his best.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But look, I do recommend this. I think it's a fun read. Don't expect to be going into great depth on his character or anything, but it is a fun read, and that's the most important thing. And then let's face it, a lot of times we read capes, that's what we want.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is, and as I said, this is for me a great way to jump into a character I knew very little about in preparation for a movie that's due out in a couple of years.
And don't bring the judgment of what you think you know about Hank Pym to this, because this is not that.
We've got to wind up because we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to quickly mention that the ones that you will be seeing in from April 2013, which is only a couple of months away. In April you'll see an Iron Man season one, which should be interesting.
Okay.
In June, of course, there's a Wolverine season one.
Oh, that could be interesting.
And then all the way down in October, I think, you'll see a Thor season one.
And for those who haven't been keeping score so far out, we have this Ant-Man, we've got Daredevil, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four, Hulk, Spider-Man, and X-Men.
That's right. Yep.
So they're the ones that are currently available now. We've done two of them now, and we may revisit some of the other ones as we go down. I wouldn't mind having a look at their Iron Man season one.
Yeah, well, I think we'll do that when it comes out, because that's April, and that sounds
I'm an Iron Man fan, and I'm actually really enjoying what Iron Man's doing at the moment, so it would be interesting to see. Okay, so let's do a little bit of housekeeping on this last couple of minutes of the show here, and basically say we do have some new shows starting up, and we also have to announce that Behind the Panels has its own website.
Yes.
Now, it's not officially open yet, but by the time you hear this, it's probably going to have its doors probably partially kicked open by then. It's behindthepanels.net, and all of the back episodes are on that site, and anything to do with panels will be there. It'll also be, of course, on geekactually.com, because that's the parent site. But panels, we decided that for those who just want the comic book stuff, they don't want to have to wade through any of the other stuff, this is your home. And this is where all the back episodes are and everything. So behindthepanels.net. Now, for those who listen to The Hobbit Show and any of our last couple of shows for film, we'll also know that we've wrapped up film, actually. 2012 finished it off, 100 episodes and an assortment of specials. The new show coming out will be called The Geek Movie Club. It's going to have a little bit wider scope. And since we're going to be doing some anime, probably talking some television and all sorts of other things that are going to go on in there. It's going to be like this. It's going to be try and keep it to an hour. So it'll be a nice tight show, more segments and so forth. And you'll be able to find that at geekmovieclub.com. These already have their feedback addresses. Feedback at geekmovieclub.com, feedback@behindthepanels.net, which is different from the one we were using before, but there is a feedback@behindthepanels.net and a feedback at the third show, of course, which is Buried the Lead, which is basically a return of Geek Actually, that original geeky show, but in a slightly different format, a little bit faster, a little bit more chaotic, and I would say probably a little bit, maybe even a little bit raunchier.
Yeah, like it's kind of an anything goes sort of show.
It's an anything goes, and so really keep your kids away from it. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun experimental ride, and you can find that at buriedthelead.com. These are all, Geek Actually still exists, geekactually.com, but these are all satellite sites that go for each of the shows.
But of course, Behind the Panels will keep going next week, next issue, 2 weeks' time. We'll be back with Punk Rock Jesus, which is a DC Vertigo miniseries. Excellent, excellent, excellent stuff. Sean Murphy did this one, and he's due to do a new series coming up later this year as well. So looking forward to that.
Just wrapped up, so go out there and grab those last issues.
Issues, yeah. I don't think it's been released as a collection yet, so you'll have to find this in singles or digitally, of course. So we're looking forward to doing that. Punk Rock Jesus, read that. We'll be back with the spoilers and all review of that in 2 weeks' time. Until then, you can find us on all those other shows we've mentioned and behindthepanels.net.
All those sites. Just go out there. And, of course, we're still on Twitter, at David McVeigh.
At DVD Bits.
And you can always chat with us there. We're always kicking around somewhere.
Exactly right. Well, thanks for joining us again, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.